This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. DNA kits like 23andMe and Ancestry are making it easier for people to explore their genetic connections and family origins. But researching genealogy can be complicated, especially for Black families with ancestors who were enslaved. Today, we're going to spend the hour talking about genealogy, how to use historical records to fill in family trees, and the challenges that can accompany that work. Joining me now are Boone County Public Library Borderlands Archive researcher, Hillary Delaney. Welcome, Hillary.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Cincinnati Hamilton County Public Library reference librarian Steve Headley. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
And a Northern Kentucky native with an interest in genealogy and who's very skilled at it, I understand, Priscilla Chambers. Thanks so much for being here, Priscilla.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's start with just the popularity of genealogy. An article about genealogy that I read said it's often called the second most popular hobby after gardening. How often do you hear from people, Hillary, who are researching their family history? And has it become more popular with the advent of these DNA tests that I talked about?
Oh, sure. So daily, because that's part of what I do in my job, but also even when I'm not at work, from family and friends. Everyone is interested. I do think DNA has definitely accelerated that because it opens doors for a lot of people who didn't have those opportunities to find those links.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Steve? How big a part of your work is that at Cincinnati Hamilton County Public Library? How often are, and has the interest even gotten stronger in recent years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I work in genealogy and local history department. So just like Hillary, it's part of my everyday thing. And, you know, the DNA testing has made things popular. But it's a bit misleading sometimes because really the details of, you know, your family tree and things like that cannot be access or found out just by doing the DNA test. And when, you know, for African-American families, it's even more problematic because there's just not a lot of African-American participation in that DNA testing. I mean, it's growing, which is great. But oftentimes, you know, people are a little bit disappointed just because there's not that many people that are participating. But it's still, you know, it can still give you a lot of good information that can help you at least with your genealogical research.
Yeah. Priscilla, talk about how you got interested in looking into your family history. When did that start and how'd you get started?
I started when I was 16 years old. So it's been a good my age here. It's a good 50 years. Oh. And my dad was a historian, and so he always was interested in history. So I just decided I was going to do research on the family, but we moved in California, and our family's from Kentucky and Ohio. So that made it difficult because I wasn't able to directly speak to the family members.
Sure. And what was it? Was there a particular document or family story that really kind of piqued your interest at the beginning?
Well, we had the bill of sale for my great-great-grandfather. And as far as I know, they've always had it. And from that, I was able to start with a name. And in the Sleet family, and there were in their Sleets all around where we lived, both Black and White Sleets family.
Yeah. And that Sleet family, that was a Northern Kentucky family, right?
Northern Kentucky.
And remind me, was it kind of Boone County, Richmond, that sort of area where?
Yeah, it was Boone County.
Okay.
Boone County.
Okay.
Yeah. And through the research, I was able to find out they were from the well, they were enslaved, but their owners were from Virginia.
Ah.
And so that was a great help there finding the area.
Yeah. That they're from. What were, as you got started on this journey and you had this tremendous, I mean, what I imagine was kind of a head start to have that document that a lot of people don't have starting out, were there some things you found along the way that really surprised you more than others?
Well, first of all, I couldn't find information really on the Black families.
Mm.
When I started my research, I did it through the Church of the Latter-day Saint,
mm-hmm.
and went to their research with the microfiche and the microfilm and lots of books, going through books. And I did a lot of history on the White families because I knew that they were related to us. And that made it available to the areas, so finding the areas that they would be in. But the stories themselves, I had always heard that my great uncle had always said, well, his grandmother was from here, and this is the area they grew up in, and the families, well, we were lucky because the families all connected. It didn't, with the black families and the white families, mm-hmm. they were always together. Mom used to talk about the kids going to school, and they would always say, well, bye, cousin, you know, and she'd go, well, they're not our cousins. And so that was, that helped a lot. And then with the funerals, it was always a mix. Mm-hmm. And we were, so that, knowing that white family history, it was, we were able to go through with the black families.
Yeah. How important is that, Hillary?
That's a huge piece. And mm-hmm. Priscilla knows this really well, and I'm sure Steve has encountered this in his research as well. But that's the first thing I tell people starting out when they are researching enslaved ancestry is you have to know as much as you can about mm-hmm. the enslaving families. In some cases, I've gone back three generations from the generation that is of concern, meaning the most the furthest back a person can get in traditional research ancestry for enslaved people is typically either Civil War records or the 1870 census, where they appear by name for the first time in official records. But there's so much more that's out there, and a lot of it's hidden. So Priscilla's right in finding all of that information on the enslaving family, because if you start at that point, you can find that extended family, which is huge. Mm. And that's what we've been sort of working towards, both together, Priscilla and I, but in my capacity at the Boone County Public Library, is we're trying to get all that information out there digitally available in public so that people can get beyond that wall.
Yeah. We're talking about genealogy for the full hour today. Do you have questions about getting started on researching your family origins? Or have you hit a roadblock and need some help? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Steve, what is that first starting point? If somebody comes in, they're a blank slate, they think, I just want to get started, what are the first steps or first few steps that you recommend to people?
Yeah, I always tell people right off the bat that genealogy is more an art than a science because, you know, people think that the records are very exact, and they're not. First things first is we'll tell them, find out as much as you can about your family from existing family members, you know, normally the oldest family member, and just try to find out as much as you can. And then we can use those names, dates, birth dates, use our genealogical resources and try to go further back. So it really starts there with the person and what they know. Yeah.
So you have to be actually willing to talk to your family.
Yeah. And for some, that's problematic. Yeah. So, you know, we basically work with what we get. So.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I know that when I started, it was during that time period when children did not interrupt parents and not in the room. They were put in another room. You go ahead and outside and play. So it was very difficult for me to find out information from people. And plus, my mom was the youngest in her family. So that also made it difficult. And she really wasn't with them because she went to college. She lived in Cincinnati before going to college. And so she didn't really know that much about them. But like I said, the bill of sale was great help in finding out where they started from. And then, and that was, like I said, when I was 16. And now with Hillary, we just found out another bill of sale for a couple. That was a bill of sale where my great-grandmother bought her husband. Oh. And now I have the bill of sale when she bought herself out of slavery later.
Wow.
So with, yeah, along with her daughter, a daughter that I never knew she had.
It's an emotional roller coaster. Yeah. And I'm not even related to them. But you feel it, and I'm sure that everybody here understands that when you are looking specifically at these records, the humanity starts to emerge. The more details you have, the more information you have, particularly with enslaved people, because the details are so few and far between. When you get them, they're precious.
Yeah.
And so it's mm-hmm. really, really nice to be able to connect those dots in that way and learn, yeah, more about our families.
Yeah. And it's very helpful what we did with my nephew. They have the books. I think it's called Grandma and Me or those books. And he had to do a report on my dad, his grandfather. And what we did was it has questions like, where did you go to school? What was your favorite color? What did you play? You know, who were your teachers? And you just fill in that information. Ask your parents to fill that in. And it helped a lot once you found out those little things. Because then you start asking more questions. Well, if you did this, who'd you do it with? You know, who were your neighbors and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Are there times, though, when those conversations can be uncomfortable, when maybe family members, older family members, don't want to talk about memories that could maybe be painful or go back a few generations? I mean, there can be some trauma there. Do you all run into that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I did with my on my mother's mother's side, because one of her mother's brother ended up being involved in a shooting where someone was killed. And he left. They dressed him up as a woman and they left and they went to New York. And his children never knew about him. But later on, years later, one of them was in New York talking about this old man that she met was there that was so nice to her. It was just a wonderful man. She never knew that was her father.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they were always afraid that there would be retaliation with the family.
Wow. What is that something you run into, Hillary, when you're helping families?
Right. So, yes. So when people, particularly with African-American genealogy, when people come in, they're usually at the point where they are comfortable with this information. They've been working on it for a very long time. More often, there's curiosity if I give a program somewhere. And people want to know how to get started. That's where I tend to caution people that if you're looking for, like Steve said, if you're looking for the oldest person in the family, which is what I recommend as well, to get information, they may not get any information. And it may not even be because that person refuses to give it or it's too uncomfortable. It may be that they don't know it either. Because once people moved and with westward expansion, you know, people were migration, people were leaving that life behind because it was painful. And so we do run into that occasionally. I think it's getting better because I think the more we talk about it, the better it gets.
Yeah. Again, we're talking about genealogy for the full hour. Do you have questions about getting started if you're trying to kind of fill out your family tree, or have you hit a roadblock? Do you need help? We've got experts here who can help you. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Steve, what are the biggest roadblocks that people hit when they come? Maybe they've gotten started, they've taken that big step, they've talked to some of their relatives, maybe they have a family Bible that has stuff written in there with some dates and names. Where is usually that first roadblock for families, whether they're African-American families or families with other backgrounds?
Yeah, it's a lot of times it's just a lack of information, or sometimes if someone has a very common last name, that can be very difficult if you know, they have a name, it's just very common, that it'd be hard to differentiate, you know, who's who, if they don't have more specific information to kind of back that up, or be able to confirm, you know, a person is who they want. But especially with African-American genealogy, it often depends upon where they're from. So, you know, there was a great migration of African-Americans from the South to the North in the 1920s. So a lot of those southern states have very little information on African-American residents there, you know, whether they were free, you know, whether it's after the Civil War or before the Civil War. You know, sometimes we rely on county histories and things like that to find information on people. Well, you'll find county histories, you know, in, say, Alabama, but they're not going to mention the African-American citizens there. So that can be difficult. So it really depends upon where they're from. But that's generally some of the roadblocks we hit is once, you know, probably the vast majority of African-Americans in Cincinnati have their relatives from the South. And when you go there, you just can't find as much information. More and more gets added all the time. So, you know, for people who hit roadblocks, you know, we always recommend, you know, come back in a little while and, you know, we may be able to find something more because things get added online all the time. So,
yeah, I could add too that being working in the same capacity that Steve does, but on the south side of the river, find the local expert, no matter where from the south, this family sprung. If you can find the local experts, Priscilla and I were talking about this earlier, the person who knows all the names, the person who knows who married who, the person who knows whose names changed to what is really important. And also localities, neighborhoods, all of that plays into finding people when they're hard to find, I think. So those are the questions that we often get in Kentucky genealogy, because we're right on the border of enslavement in terms of African-American genealogy and enslavement, that is. But I think it is important to tap into those resources. It's kind of the same thing as looking for the oldest person in your family. You look for the local expert.
Yeah. And when you say local expert, could that be somebody out in a neighborhood? Somebody, yeah. It's not necessarily some professor somewhere, right, or a librarian.
It often isn't. Yeah. It often is the person who everyone knows in the neighborhood, you know, the keeper of kind of the information in an informal sense.
Yeah. Did you find help from kind of local experts like that, Priscilla, or have you become the local expert with all the work you've done?
Well, most of my family is gone, and I don't have anybody else really to go to find out information. And that's really hard for me, especially moving back here, because once I've gotten here, there's nobody for me to talk to, you know, about it. And I found that when I go and ask cousins, I said, we don't know. We have no idea. And one thing about Kentucky, they have lost a lot of their records because the records were destroyed. And one time, was it a fire? That was,
not in Boone County, I'm proud to say, however. I can't take credit for that. But no, there's a lot of courthouse disasters. Cincinnati has suffered several. And that does, that's another thing. I mean, newspapers, though, always look in newspapers.
Yeah. Well, we're going to come back and continue this conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're spending the hour today talking about genealogy with advice for researching your family history. My guests are Boone County Public Library, Borderlands Archive researcher Hillary Delaney, Cincinnati Hamilton County Public Library reference librarian Steve Headley, and a Northern Kentucky native with an interest in genealogy, Priscilla Chambers. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Steve, before the break, you were talking about the tricky part of having a common last name. And I know there are different websites that people use to get started. You can end up kind of going down a wrong path if somebody helps you make a wrong connection, right? Talk to us a little bit about the tricky part of all that.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, you know, that's where a lot of brick walls can happen with a common surname. That's why we try to get as much confirming information as you can about the person, dates of birth and death, where they resided, you know, and you can find a variety of records, you know, war draft registration cards provide a good amount of information. You know, the further back you go, the less information there is. So that can be difficult when you go further back. But yeah, it's really just using all the different resources that we have to try to find those confirming records. And one of the resources we have is the Ancestry Library editions from the makers of Ancestry.com, which a lot of people are familiar with. But what's nice about that database is once you find a record of the person that you know is right, it does give you a lot of suggested records, which is very beneficial. Now, the suggested records aren't always the person that you're looking for, but it can give you other ways, other records to find and other ways to go. So that's one resource that's very beneficial with that.
Yeah, you almost have to be a detective and make sure you're following the right leads. And what are some of the best websites for people to get started? I mean, and this is brand new from when you started, Priscilla, all those years ago, there weren't websites that you could go to. You were doing it the shoe leather way, but or telephone, all that. What are some of the websites that people typically use to get started, Hillary?
Well, certainly the Ancestry Library Edition, which most libraries carry now, I think. I use a lot of Family Search. That is a free website, but at the Boone County Public Library, we are an affiliate partner with Family Search, so we can get to a few more records than you can from home. But that's kind of difficult for beginners because it doesn't do the suggestions. But boy, is it a treasure trove if you can get some help when you're starting. Beginning, I do think that I'm a big fan of paper still. I think start with the oldest person in your family, build out that tree. I like to write it down first before I put it in any sort of digital format, because I think you can get things straight in your mind, decide what your goals are, and go in that direction. Mm-hmm. And with African American genealogy in particular, the oldest person in the family, as we were talking about, might not always tell you. And so you go with what you got. And I would say the law of averages comes into play. If it seems like the right person, follow it until you can disprove that, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And you have to run in, you're going to run into obstacles. You're going to run into people who don't want to speak. I had a relative who just burst in on my sister and I one day. You know, you need to not bother answering questions. You need to stop doing this. And it ended up that he didn't think his parents were married.
Oh.
He thought he was illegitimate. And I found, I had the marriage certificate for him, and I showed him later on. I go, yeah, they're married, you know. But it was early morning, and he just burst. He was so angry that we were doing research on the family.
Well, you must have helped him kind of resolve something that he'd been worried about for a long time when you could show him that marriage certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about genealogy. Do you have questions or comments, or is there something you're trying to figure out about your own family history? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org.
One thing I wanted to say about the names and common names, I have an ancestor who had 10 children, and every single one of those children named one of their daughters Margaret.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. That's like torture for you.
Yes. So when you're going through the family history, you have to figure out which Margaret you're talking about.
Yeah. Holy goodness. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Bray. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Thank you. I would love to hear a little bit about how you explain the philosophical sort of purpose of genealogy to some of the older family members that you're trying to get information from. I think you mentioned before that sometimes they don't want to talk about those old stories or those old people, and I have to kind of explain why I'm interested in it. So I'd love your insight there.
Oh, that's a great question. Priscilla, I'm going to start with you. Uh-oh, you look scared. Did you ever have an older relative say, why are you messing with this? Why are you digging in here? How did you explain why you thought?
And he's interested now, but yes, I did. For instance, the one cut that I just mentioned. But yeah, a lot of times they just don't want to go back and find out. I think they're a little scared to find out what information you're going to find. And when you really talk to them and say why you want to know this, that it's important for me, I maybe want to tell my children about our family history, then they kind of mellow out a little bit and they'll say, okay, I'll tell you this story. Now, it may just be, you know, a very broad part of the story, but they'll tell you part of it.
Yeah. Hillary, what do you hear from people? How do people explain to you why it's important to them to find this
out? Well, in terms specifically to address the question, I think that it is subjective, of course. Priscilla touched on some things that if someone has they're hesitant because there's some part of the family history that they're worried about being embarrassed. Times are a-changing, mm-hmm. So it's okay. And we hear that all the time that, you know, maybe somebody was born out of wedlock or conceived before someone was married. I try to put people at ease. And you can do that with your family members, too. Look, Grandma, nobody's going to spill the beans in public if you don't want us to. We need to know more about our family history and our roots. And I think that's important to ground people. And we kind of live in a world now where we do a lot digitally. And I think genealogy is one thing, even though we do a lot with that digitally, that can sort of connect people. And that's true with family members, too.
Yeah.
You know, so in order to explain that to your relative, maybe it's just important for me to know who I am.
Yeah. What's your philosophy, Steve? What is it? I don't know if you're into genealogy yourself or if you're just helping everybody else who comes into the library. But what's that philosophy that kind of guides people who come to you or that guides you?
Yeah, I think it's really important for people just to, you know, people who are doing research just to convey to people that they're just looking for part of their identity. It's very important for all people just to know where they came from, you know, despite the details, you know, they just want to know more about their identity and the history of their family so that, you know, so that they just know. So that's very important. And, you know, I think oftentimes for African-American researchers, I think that's even more significant. Because there may be some oral history that's passed through the family. They want to confirm or deny that. That's it. Like I said, it's just really part of establishing someone's identity.
Yeah.
Recently, you made me think of this, Steve. I just got a question from someone locally who is connected to one of our families that were featured in Boone County's early history as one of the families who were African-American who stayed in the county. And he was, this man that he was asking about was blind. And the family story that I heard was that the Klan had thrown acid in his face. Wow. And that's so upsetting to hear. And I had never heard this story. And so I looked and I found this man luckily had a big presence in our local newspaper. And he was a farmer, landowner, often saw stories about how much tobacco he brought in because he was bringing in the winning amount a lot. He actually had an accident with some farm equipment and something blinded him, like a piece of equipment broke and blinded him. And I was really relieved to hear that. Not that bad things and violent things don't happen, but that certainly changed the whole direction of how this man felt about where his family had lived.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that question, Bray. We really appreciate it. And best of luck on your journey to find out more about your family. I want to talk about some other online resources. I know friends have used Find a Grave. And also, I'm a former newspaper person, so newspapers.com, I think, can be really helpful. What do you think of those resources? What do they offer people?
Yeah, I love newspapers. They add, you know, just color to your family history. So it's, you know, genealogy is a lot of names, dates, and places, but the newspapers really give you the stories, some good, some bad. But it just adds to the genealogical research. And going back into the, you know, early 1900s and even 19th century, newspapers reported on everything. You know, if you fell off a ladder at your home, it's in a paper, you know, that type of thing. Or if there's a divorce, they'll tell you all the details about why that's happening. So newspapers are great. You know, our library has a lot of newspaper resources, not only for local papers, but some other papers as well, some historical newspaper databases. We partner with Newspaper Archive to have them digitize our newspapers. So we have access to a lot of local newspapers that once were only available just on microfilm, but now they're digitized and you can search through them much easier. And again, you can find all kinds of little bits of information where a family member is mentioned. So it adds a lot of, you know, just a lot of flesh and color to those relatives.
It's a lot of color. It's just fun to read them and say, oh, this is what happened that day. And all these different people visiting from out of town and weddings and births and deaths. And it's a lot of fun. That's how, and going through scanning, when I was looking for my great-grandfather's obituary, I found articles on the Black Homemakers Group, and when my mom joined the Homemakers Group, and I didn't know that she was part of the Homemakers Group, and with that it tells you, oh, they learned how to set a table this day, a formal table, and it tells you where every little piece went on the table setting. So all those little things in the newspapers are great.
We are all fans of the newspaper, all of us sitting at this table. And I will tell you that when I started doing, I do a lot of Underground Railroad research. And so there's an element of mythos and romance to these Underground Railroad stories that gets amped up a lot in the newspapers. But within all of that drama, there are great details. What I always say is I start there and then I prove and disprove everything that I can in these articles. But I'll tell you what, I couldn't do half the work that I do without the newspapers. So that's one of my favorites. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
And there's just in the Cincinnati newspapers, there were in the in the 19th century, late 19th century, there were the newspapers had an African American weekly column, which was unusual for any kind of notice positively for the African American community. And so we've digitized a number of these. We call them the African American Society columns. So it started off in a newspaper that's no longer in existence, the Commercial, and then the Enquirer picked up, and then a third newspaper picked up on it and had a weekly African American Society. We call them Society columns, but it really was an insight into the African American community events at that time. So you can read all about the parties they went to and things like that. And so those are just a rich source of information, as just like what Priscilla was talking about, giving an insight into exactly what was happening in the community that day or that time period.
Yeah. We got an email from Ginny. Ginny emails, "Our family has been keeping records for years. Ralph Blaisdell and family came to this territory from England in 1635. There are many spellings of Blaisdell, Blasdell, Bleasdell, etc. Anyone looking for information on this family can check our website, https://Blaisdell, that's spelled B-L-A-I-S-D-E-L-L. There are lots of people in the tri-state area who are related, and we are looking to add new people to our family tree. A national reunion will be held in Maine in 2025. Mm. We got a party invitation here
that's
on the
great.
Show today. That's terrific. You mentioned newspapers and obituaries, and that's we're starting to lose that. People now, you have to pay for obituaries.
Right.
They're not as thorough. What does that mean for the future of genealogy and people who've been who rely on those records now and won't have them in that kind
right.
of way in the future?
Well, without those, I mean, definitely you can lose those resources. Although a lot of the funeral homes give you a pretty good amount of space to make comments.
Sure.
And I've seen people essentially duplicating what would be an obituary on a free site because it has become really, really sort of cost prohibitive to run an obituary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. How, did you rely on obituaries a lot?
I have stacks of programs from funerals. And if you want to find out information, who the parents were, who the siblings were, that's a great place to look.
Yeah.
And I just happen to keep mine from here and in from California. But the obituary itself, it's in the newspaper, is fantastic for finding out information.
Yeah. Priscilla, I know, and I think you kind of alluded to this when we first started talking about this, that in your research, you found a tiny deceased ancestor that you didn't know about previously. Can you walk us through that story? This was a sleet baby, I believe, that you found through your, or you found out about through your research. Mm-hmm. Tell us that story.
Well, I actually found out through Hillary.
We work together a lot.
in the cemetery research that she did in Florence. And I knew there was a child. I just didn't know where the child was buried.
Right.
And which, great surprise, because I knew that they attended church in Florence at the Florence Baptist Church. But the information of knowing where that child was and having the name, I knew the first name, I have the whole name now of the child.
Yeah.
And it's
it's a nice moment. She's referring to a project that I did to document some unmarked graves in a cemetery in Florence. And that was a process, and we don't have enough time for me to explain all that. But I knew Priscilla already. And when I started seeing the Sleet name come through some of those records and ownerships of cemetery plots, that's when we started talking a lot about that, because she did know some information, but not all of it. And it was brand new to me, starting the research on that cemetery. And so collaboration is important. And pulling together as many of those resources as you can.
And I'm getting ready to contact the older siblings, and because she's born late, and find out if they know that baby was buried in that cemetery. Mm. They may not know.
Yeah.
Well, not the siblings. It would be the their children.
Yeah.
Because the siblings are passed.
She is the only sleep buried in that cemetery.
Yeah, she's
cemetery.
The only one.
So, and that probably came because there was ownership of a plot there that they later went to another cemetery for burial.
So, I see.
Yeah.
We do have another caller on the line. Hi, Janet. Thanks so much for your call. What is your question or comment?
My question is, we're trying to find out information on my husband's family and even his birth. And he was told, or he found out, that he was born at Elizabeth Booth's home. And at the time, I guess it was for maybe unwed mothers or something. And it was located in Cincinnati or Northern Kentucky, but he has since moved to New York. So we did find contact there and tried to get a hold of them, but we never have gotten a response. But we do know that he has siblings born after him that went through adoption through the Catholic Charities. And we wondered how we go about getting, can we get their information? Mm.
Thank you. That's interesting. I do know, I'm familiar with the Elizabeth Booth Hospital or home here that was in Cincinnati years ago. How much luck do you have, Steve, in helping people with records that date back to that hospital or Catholic Charities? When adoption is involved, does that make it more complicated to try to get that genealogy?
Yeah, exponentially difficult with adoption, just because there are some organizations that won't let you see their records. And then there's some organizations that have that no longer exist and their records just can't be found. So adoption is a very difficult kind of roadblock in the genealogical research. And, you know, specifically as far as the Booth home, you know, I'm not aware or I don't know specifically, you know, where those records might be or how to get access to those. But yeah, when you have adoption in your genealogical research, that makes things a lot more difficult.
I will say, yes, absolutely right. And with Catholic adoption records, it's even inconsistent within a parish. So you'll see that there are either a cutoff time period where they will allow access to some of those records, or they're in a different repository than the rest of the records. So you run into some difficulty there. But I will say DNA gives hope for that type of question. My colleagues and I have worked with a lot of people who have been adopted with great success in terms of DNA. And that's just simply because there's so much interest now. The pool is growing.
Yeah.
So that's possible.
Yeah. Janet, thanks for that question. Best of luck with your research. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about genealogy for the whole hour today, and we're taking your questions. My guests are Boone County Public Library Borderlands Archive researcher Hillary Delaney, Cincinnati Hamilton County Public Library reference librarian Steve Headley, and a Northern Kentucky native with an interest in genealogy, Priscilla Chambers. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at WVXU.org. You know, before the break, we got a call about some genealogy research that involved adoption. Would it be helpful for that caller to visit one of you at the library and kind of maybe talk in a little bit more detail? Would you recommend that, Steve?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Okay.
Just provide, have as much information with you as possible, and we'll see what we can find.
Okay. Bring those binders with you. We do have some email questions. David writes, many times when I try to look genealogy up online, there's a paywall. Before they will give you the information, you have to subscribe to their sites. Is there a central location that lists the free sites that we can use when we're doing a genealogical search?
Not a central location generally, but public libraries, public libraries all have databases that are available either with a library card or without and in-house. Ancestry Library, I think exclusively, with the exception of during the pandemic, is only available in the place where it's subscribed from, which is the library. But there are some freebies out there. FamilySearch is one, FamilySearch.org. And some of the sites that Ancestry is the parent company of also gives free access. So you can go to through your library, usually Fold 3, which is military records and Revolutionary War records, and they have a great library of books. That's one. Heritage Quest is another. So that's sort of an Ancestry light. So yeah, there's a lot you can do without spending money.
Okay. just go to the library. That's exactly. that's the lesson here. We got an email from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, as the digital age evolves and the circulation of traditional print media, traditional newspapers continues to decline, where will future genealogists look in the future? Will it be all the digital world? Is that where people are going to be looking? What do you think, Priscilla? Have you thought about this yourself?
Yes, just with audiobooks.
Yeah.
I really believe that is going to happen, that you're going to, when you want to do research, everything's going to be digitized, and you'll just be just like going, like I said, going to the library, but you'll be able to do it probably from home and just find out information that way.
Yeah. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah. I mean, it's really kind of a scary thought that, you know, those newspapers of record won't be around anymore. And even the information that, you know, funeral homes provide online right now, you never know how long that's going to be up. So it really is kind of concerning. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but, you know, there will always still be the governmental records, you know, your Social Security death index and other things, because when someone dies, it causes, you know, records to be formed. So there will always be that, but it is going to be, I think, a little bit more unfortunate and hard to find once newspapers go away more. You won't be able to find those interesting stories or even maybe those obituaries that you could find. But, you know, they're still going. So hopefully they'll still continue to exist in some form or fashion going forward.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the great digital archive of the future, if it becomes easily searchable, you're going to be looking at social media for information about ancestors.
That is a scary thought.
It is terrifying.
Really.
But even chat rooms, there are all of these sort of publicly driven and non-vetted sites that hold a lot of information that, but you know, with the newspapers, historical newspapers, I vet them like crazy anyway.
Yeah.
So assume that there are errors no matter what repository it comes from. But I do think we do put so much information out there right now that hopefully someone will get some benefit from that in the future.
In journalism school, they tell you if your mother says she loves you, check it out. So I believe in checking everything. We have Marianne on the line. Thanks for calling, Marianne. What did you want to talk about?
Yes, thank you very much. In regards to DNA research, my sister did this recently and found out our ancestry from the Celtic area. And we were surprised because we thought we had some ancestry like in the German French area. So is it possible that some of our relatives were not part of that database, that DNA database, that we might still have connections elsewhere? It's just it happened to search just the DNA database. Does that make sense?
What do you think?
There are many, and some are larger than others. If she did ancestry, autosomal DNA, that's a very large database, but there are others that reach different communities. So absolutely, yes, you will get different results, and the database that she's currently using will probably constantly be updated with new information.
Yeah, that happened. My husband, who thought he was super German, isn't very German. So those little tests can bring some surprises. Thanks so much, Marianne. We also got an email from Kat. Kat was adopted when she was 3 weeks old. After a long search, she found her mother on Facebook. Sure enough, she'd been searching for Kat for years, even losing thousands to what she called search angels. Kat writes, I've been able to learn a lot about my family and meet my sister and brother, as well as my extended family, and have a new grandparent relationship to share with my son. I know not all adoption stories work out as well, but my grandmother on my adoptive mother's side was a genealogist and historian, so I'm grateful to be able to get to know my new/old family's history.
Brava.
Wow.
Yeah. That's got to be what, you know, we've talked a little bit about the future of genealogy, but Priscilla, when you find out information about your past, about your ancestors, the people who came before you, what does that tell you about yourself? Do you feel like you learn about yourself and your strengths and maybe kind of your own attitudes and approach to life by learning about your past?
Yes, I do. And I'm always so thankful. I'm always saying, oh, thank you, you know, that you're from here. Because you get to, when you find somebody, you also learn the area. if you're good, you're really a genealogist. You are not, doesn't have to be a genealogist, but you look in, find them, and then you want to know about the area they lived in. And when you find that and you come forward in all areas, military, you know, it doesn't, with when I found my great uncle fought in the 117th, and he was, then I found out he was there when Lee surrendered.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, that's really great. You know, I thought, well, good for him, you know. And it makes you feel good. It makes you want to know more. And you will never stop wanting to learn. Once you find out something, you want to learn more about it.
Yeah, we say you're never finished. When someone says, when I'm done with my genealogy.
And nice. It's addicting too. So
Do you find, because there can be surprises with genealogy? I mean, people can, you know, we talked about those older relatives who are worried about stories that they might not want public. There can be surprises. But do you find that people are more often feeling empowered by what they learn? Or are there those bad surprises that make people run screaming from the library, Steve?
Yeah, I think people just want to know. So the more information they find, even some of the negative information, I think they're just glad to know. And it's very rewarding on my part and people that help. You know, we get emails or telephone calls from people all around the country, even internationally, who had relatives in Cincinnati. And sometimes we can find information very quickly for them that they've been looking for years. So it's really rewarding to be able to, you know, put that little piece of the puzzle in their genealogy research, and, you know, sometimes with very little effort, just because the resources we have may be very specific to our area.
Yeah. And what I found was you have to be willing to put it in your past because it is the past. When you look for it, mm-hmm. Don't think, well, that happened and it's got to bring it forth and now I'm going to dwell on it. No, don't dwell on it. It is from the past. And all you're doing is looking it up and saying, hey, this is what happened.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we got an email from Scott. Scott writes, Steve has helped me many times at the public library. He's great. Whenever I do my local history projects, I always credit Steve and the library so people are aware of what a great resource these folks are. So I'm glad we got fan mail for you, Steve, because we have a human fan mail here for Hillary and the work that she's done. So.
It's mutual.
I owe him some money now.
Well, I've been talking with Boone County Public Library Borderlands Archive researcher Hillary Delaney, Cincinnati Hamilton County Public Library reference librarian Steve Headley, and a Northern Kentucky native with an interest in genealogy, Priscilla Chambers. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.